So with this training video, I have got three of our awesome consultants together from all around the country. They're going to introduce themselves quickly, but we're going to tackle the big question, or the big questions around that challenge with dealing with difficult clients. So first things first, we're going to go through who everybody else is. So first of all, Charlie, if you'd like to do a quick introduction to yourself.
Yes, hey everyone. My name's Charlie Syme. My business is called Pigface Marketing. I'm based in Melbourne and I work with a range of clients, but probably skewing into the sort of for-purpose space. And in terms of the work I do, I probably skew towards the content creation side of marketing.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you, Charlie. Christy?
So, Christy here, Hunter Marketing Co. is my business name, and I predominantly focus on marketing strategy and supporting with implementation. I also do a bit of coaching as well. So my clients are generally growing SMEs and solo business owners, generally speaking. So I've got basically three different levels of what I offer. So it really does depend on the business and how established they are.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And last but definitely not least, Sarah Leal, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. So I'm Sarah. My business is Saint and Queen Marketing. We focus primarily on e-commerce. We obviously have a range of other clients in different industries, but that's been primarily my background the last few years. So managing smaller businesses and being their marketing person. So pretty much generalists looking after every single aspect of marketing you could think of. That's what I've been doing.
Cool. Awesome. Right. Look, the first question, we're talking about difficult clients. Now, I'm going to say that we don't want to mention any names. I'm sure we've all got the war stories from our time doing this. But nobody wants to get sued here, especially not me. So we'll keep names out of it. But just starting with Charlie, what is it? If I say to you difficult clients, what does that sort of mean to you? What is that, you know, what goes through your head when I say that?
Yeah, look, a couple of things go through my head. I think one of the unique things about what we're doing, like the fractional CMO model, is you're not full time with anyone. So you're helping out different clients. So something that is a warning sign for me, I think, is unreasonable expectations, be it, you know, available at all times or why wasn't this done yesterday? The model is obviously I'm here to work with you with our agreed contract at a day a week or a day a month or whatever. So if they're not really getting how that works, that's maybe first warning sign for me.
Okay. Christy, yourself?
Yeah, look, I think because I work pretty closely with CEOs and owners of businesses, and I think when they get overly involved, like they start to micromanage and, you know, wanting to perfect things, to the point where it's, you know, quite from a, because when I manage teams or help to manage teams in businesses, when they're giving those people far too much feedback, it has a really big impact on like productivity and mental health even, because then the, say, marketing coordinator that's trying to do everything in the business is getting highly criticized like day to day. Then they're not confident in what they're doing for the business. And so that has a really big impact, not just on the person, but as, you know, on the business as a whole as well. So there's a couple of, you know, things that I've seen with some of my clients, and I have to have those discussions with the CEO and the business owner to go, hey, you can't do that. It's not going to end well.
What about you, Sarah?
Yeah, it's probably a mix of what Charlie and Christy have both said in their responses. Definitely the micromanaging has been, you know, is a big part in smaller businesses, but also jumping in. And I think it's an extension of what Christy was saying, is jumping in and actually changing the work that you've done for them. That's probably another one.
Yeah, that would not be fun. Yeah.
No.
Okay. Go on, Sarah. What were you going to say?
That's it.
Oh, cool. I think one of the interesting things, one of the flags that I've seen as well, is where they've had previously poor experiences with someone who's done marketing, be that an agency or be that internally, and one of their first comments to you, and certainly from me, even before we get through the, you know, even we get to the point when we're actually working with them, and it's not generally me working with them anymore, but they you know, we've tried this and it didn't work, or we've tried agencies and they didn't work as well. Mm-hmm. I recently had someone who said, you know, I've been through three coaches before I've been talking to you. And straight away, red flag, and I'm like, this is not going to end well, you know.
Yeah.
Because I hate to say it, but it feels like sometimes, you know, that everyone says the customer's always in the right, but sometimes they're not, are they, Christy?
No. And I think I've built, you know, some good relationships with my clients where I can have those really transparent and honest conversations with them. So I think that's just really key from the get-go. If you can try to build that rapport as an advisor, that they kind of, you know, you're positioning yourself that way that they'll listen to you and take on their feedback or the feedback you're getting.
I know we've all sort of come from marketing, but we all are in marketing backgrounds predominantly. But do you think it's uniquely a marketing thing, Sarah? Do you think it's that you know they perhaps wouldn't get involved if we were lawyers or if we were HR people?
I think it would happen with anyone, to be honest. I think business owners are always going to have, you know, it's their business, it's their baby. So it's, I guess, depending on who they've worked with in the past and the trust that they have for people going forward. So trust is obviously a big part of being a consultant with a business. If they can trust you and they can see the outcomes and you can provide statistics for those outcomes, that's where you're probably going to have a better relationship with your client.
Yeah. What about you, Charlie? Do you think it's uniquely to marketing, or do you think there's that sort of applies across other, you know, other perhaps people that they work with?
Well, I kind of do think it is a bit of a unique marketing war story. You know, this was in a previous job when the head of finance was telling me what we should be doing with the logo. And I, you know, I just couldn't believe it. And I don't think that happens to the same degree. But, you know, marketing makes people passionate, and especially business owners. And, yeah, look, that is part of the job.
Mm.
In terms of, often they don't really, you know, with respect, they don't really know what they're talking about from a marketing perspective, but you can bet they're going to have an opinion. So those diplomatic skills are pretty important to navigate those.
Did you tell the finance guy what he should be doing with his profit and loss as well?
I spent the next few weeks plotting how I can do something in return to drive home the point of what just happened.
I think it's one of those ones where, you know, marketing can often be quite subjective. You know, people can have an opinion about, as you said, about a logo or a campaign. And we've all been sort of programmed to a degree to think about advertising in a subjective way rather than an objective way. So, you know, perhaps... Like, do you think, you know, Christy, that they're sort of looking at it going, well, if I don't like it, then nobody's going to like this?
Yeah, look, I think that they are probably a bit too close to their own brand, you know, I think when that happens, you know, I think they don't have that broader perspective. And that's why I kind of come in and go, well, you know, is what your opinion is, do you think is the same as what your customer's opinion is? So put it back to them that way and get them thinking differently.
Yeah. You've all sort of mentioned a few ways of approaching that, and be that a CEO or be that a business owner or somebody else. Like, Sarah, how would you, you know, if someone else is, if you were sort of advising someone else facing this challenge, like, what would be the things that you would do to tackle the problem?
Probably communication would be number one. Is obviously having that chat with the client that they're working with, making sure that the expectations are laid out initially before even the project gets started. So making sure that the client's aware of what the agreement is, and then obviously that's set in stone and they're the days that you're doing, and this is the project or this is the work that you'll be providing them. And then so obviously having that laid out and that communication from the get-go, but obviously if they've got to a point where you know, it's past that point, is then just sitting down and reiterating all that again and having that communication with the client again and just going, okay, we've worked together for this long. This is what, I expect to provide you. What do you expect for me to give you as well? And then, come to an agreement there so that you can move forward. But it's also about, being positive and confident in the work that you're providing the client as well, because at the end of the day, they've hired you as the expert. You're the expert in marketing, not them. So that's why they've got you on board. So you just need to, obviously be professional about it, but go back to them with, statistics and results that you've achieved for them in the time that you've worked for them as well.
What about you, Charlie? Is it something that you would sort of day dot? You sit there and go, hey, this is, this is the line in the sand. This is what I'm here to do. Or is it something that you tackle later on? Or is it just a combination of those that you're constantly repeating, reinforcing why you're there?
Look, it's something that I think is got to be done throughout the relationship. And I was just thinking, credit to you guys, with the contact reports within the platform, that has been really good discipline for me to make sure that update is going on a regular basis. It's helpful for me too to track back about what happens throughout the week. And things like that can just really protect yourself. If there are sort of unreasonable things that might come your way, if you've got that documentation, you're in a much stronger position to deal with it.
It's funny. We looked at those contact reports because that's something that we've had since day dot. And Matt and I always talk about the fact that we should probably sit down and work out the length of contract for people who put in contact reports every week versus the ones that don't put in contact reports every week. I was sure there is some sort of relation that says, if your constant feedback means that you work with the client longer. So, I think that's super important. Christy, you sort of mentioned sitting down with the client. I mean, is this one of those things where you potentially, take them out of the office or buy them a drink first or, just to say, are you sitting comfortably? I need to have a conversation with you. I mean, some as you would know, and I would know, and everyone would know, is that often these business owners can actually be quite intimidating. They, they're strong people, be they male or female, but it's hard sometimes to have conversations with them.
Yeah, it is. And I think, what Sarah was saying about being confident in yourself is really important. I'm probably at a point in my career and my age where I'm just like, I don't give a shit anymore. I'm just going to have this conversation, whether I like it or not, or whether the other person likes it or not. It's going to happen because it's really critical to do that. And yes, I have a couple of clients where I go, yep, let's get out of the office. Let's have a conversation in a coffee shop where, it's not a boring boardroom and it feels uncomfortable. It's like, let's just chill out a bit here, but talk about the important stuff moving forward. And that seems to work well for me.
Yeah. Look, it's a great lesson that, I learned from years ago when I was standing on the front door of nightclubs working with bouncers and the good bouncers that always used to say to me, the moment you take the person out of the situation or out of the area that's perhaps caused the confusion or caused the challenge, automatically, challenges sort of, they deflate and people become a lot easier to talk to and become a lot more, willing to have conversations with you.
Absolutely.
So, I think that idea of taking them out of their comfort zone, and potentially even, Sarah, taking them out of their comfort zone on a regular basis, taking them out of work and having conversations with them maybe, once a month or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think, has anyone sort of done that in sort of on a regular basis?
I try to do checkpoints every kind of 3 months. Monthly can be a bit much for some people. Like I'm having internal WIP meetings once a week with teams and things like that. So that keeps people accountable. And it also really highlights, you know, the productivity and, you know, people's, you know, what they're good at and what they're not so good at. So it's good for me to go, right, we've been having this meeting and this is what I found and here's the results. And you can check in at that 3-month mark and go, hey, this is how we're tracking. Here's the areas of improvement. A lot of the time it's communication, you know, and expectation setting.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about those resolutions. You know, again, your challenge can be you're communicating well, you're sending WIPs, you're sending contact reports. But is there anything else, Sarah, that you can sort of think of that would be a, you know, a decent resolution or things that you would perhaps put in place that might, you know, make it easier for them to understand what's being done?
Yeah, obviously, like monthly report, like the contact reports are great because it provides an overview of what you've been doing for them. But being able to provide a monthly report as well, which outlines statistics and the success that you've had for them over that particular month. Yeah. So through all the different platforms you're using, for me, especially through like e-com, it's all the email marketing, the website, the social media, is just providing them with an update on that and comparing it to what the market's doing as well so that they can actually see the success and the progress that they're getting from you. I think it's really beneficial.
What about you, Charlie? Something that you might put in place that would potentially sort of help in terms of, you know, long-term communication?
Yeah, look, I was thinking about what you guys were chatting about before and beyond like the reports and the administrative side of our jobs. I think sort of that level of rapport and being able to be real with the client, like even if they are difficult, if you can sit down with them and they can tell you what they're upset about or why they're being difficult, then that's, you're going to learn something. And, you know, maybe the end of that conversation is, look, maybe this isn't working out, but that's probably better than sticking in a situation that's not working for either of you. So, yeah, maybe it's a beer or a coffee or a different venue, or it's find some way to crack through that like level of passive aggressiveness and talk honestly.
And that's an interesting point as well, because sometimes it's not necessarily you or the marketing or something that they're angry about. Sometimes they're angry about something else.
Yeah.
It's just manifesting itself in a way that you're the target. You know, maybe you're the immediate person in focus there. So that's who they're potentially taking it out on. Have you seen instances, Christy, where there's perhaps been a bigger picture that you've, that perhaps on the face of it that you were missing?
Yeah, look, I think, I try to build that rapport with CEOs because, you know, it's lonely at the top, generally speaking.
Yeah.
And so I allow them to not, I don't actually recommend this all the time, but I allow them to vent.
Yeah.
And let them speak their mind, and whether I agree with it or not, it's just, you're the listening ear for them. And I think that just helps to build that relationship, for the short and the long term.
Yeah.
And I think that you can gain a lot of respect, you know, just being there and available for them. You know, sometimes it happens outside of hours and things like that, but you've got to create some boundaries there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that generally speaking, leaders just are very lonely and isolated, and it can be really stressful and frustrating, and they just want to have someone near them that can hear them and listen to them. So I allow that sometimes.
What about you, Sarah? Have you perhaps missed the bigger picture sometimes with clients?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a bit of an emotional person, so I take things to heart quite regularly. So I think something that I've learned from that, and it's probably where I've missed it in the past, is that you can take things quite emotionally and personally. So you're taking a step back and actually looking at the situation, you might actually see it clearer, and that it's not actually a bigger deal. It's not the big deal that you think it is when it first happens. So,
yeah. I think there's a couple of things that sort of resonate for me, is that often we're dealing with businesses where every dollar that they're spending is potentially a dollar that would normally go in their pay packet or their back pocket or however you want to define it. So for them, that dollar is a lot more precious than perhaps, you know, a corporate CEO or a bigger CEO who doesn't necessarily own, you know, that much of the business or owns a small part of the business or is still going to get paid irrespective of how much the marketing budget is. So sometimes we don't see that there is a, you know, the sensitivity around money, certainly with people who've come from perhaps nothing or have struggled to get to where they've got to. And the other thing that I often see, it'd be interesting if you've seen the same thing, Charlie, is, you know, where there's other relationships within the business, because we've talked about solo CEOs and solo business owners, but we haven't necessarily talked about where there are other dynamics at play, where there's not just the CEO, but the CEO's partner or the, and I mean, you know, personal partner as well as business partners and board members and all those kind of things. Have you had that challenge as well, Charlie?
Yeah, so I actually am currently working with two husband and wife teams. Business owners and business partners, and look, it's great. Like, you know, it's fun, and I get to know them both. But yeah, there's obviously a dynamic there. And to their credit, one of them said to me when I came on board, they said, "Listen, we're a married business partnership, so we push the boundaries, but we're not." In terms of like hours and commitment, but you know, that's not an expectation that you have to do that as well. So she was basically telling me, watch your own boundaries, which, you know, I respected, but it's a different dynamic for sure.
What about you, Chrissy? Husband and wife teams, are they the best or are they the worst?
The experiences that I've had with them, they seem to not communicate well with each other.
Yeah.
And so that just was like, well, who am I listening to here? You know?
Yeah.
You're both the owners. You're both kind of trying to give me direction or your thoughts or whatever. But at the end of the day, I'm like, okay, so the wife said this, but the husband's saying this. Like, can you guys just kind of get your shit together a little bit here, please?
Now, Sarah, we know a very you know, successful bit husband and wife team that you've worked for and I know quite well. So I'll ask you the same question, but you're gonna have to be really careful how you answer this one, Sarah, but because they'll know it's them, right?
Yeah.
but you've been in that situation and I would probably say the people that we talk about, both very, very smart, very strong personalities. How do you navigate that husband and wife dynamic?
That was obviously a fun time in my marketing career working with those guys. they definitely, you know, I haven't had the same situation as Christy with them. They obviously had their different perspectives and ways that they wanted to run the business. One was a creative and one was the money person. It was, you know, obviously just navigating that, but I always spent a lot of time with them, so I managed to just, you know, get everyone in the same room and put together a plan for the next month, and everyone agreed upon it at that point, and that's what we ran with, and we kept doing that on a monthly basis. So and because I was there regularly, we kept the communication stream open.
Yeah,
I was also strong in telling them how I thought it needed to go as well.
Well, and I think that was the good thing is, I think, and we, you know, you've all mentioned it, the fact that the relationship and the dynamic that you were allowed, that you could have those conversations with them. Would that be fair to say that they, you know, there was an open enough room that you could talk to them in a way that was honest and open?
Yeah, absolutely.
Would that be fair with who we're talking about there, Sarah? Assuming we're talking about the same people?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. No, they were, definitely open conversations. You know, a lot of the times it was me and the wife shutting the husband down, but that's okay as well because we both were the creatives in the situation. So. We knew what we wanted for the marketing.
Is it that? Because that's a danger that you get stuck in that middle. you know, and trying to get yourself out of that. You know, have you faced that, Charlie, where there's that husband and wife dynamic and it's quite tension, there's tension there, and you're sort of, you're almost playing marriage counsellor at some point.
Oh, look, thankfully not. I haven't gone that deep, but there are nuances to it, you know, yeah. Like Sarah said, you know, she does the money, he does the creative, or vice versa. So learning those dynamics and how they interact, and I guess you figure out how you can get things through through both of them.
So look, we've spoken sort of about, you know, all the challenges that you face. Is there a time, Christy, when you've just gone, fuck this, I'm out of here?
Yes. About three times.
Tell us about one of those. You know, again, let's hold back on names and be too descriptive about it. But yeah.
Yeah. So this was probably a couple of years ago now, where I acquired the client just after COVID, and it was all very exciting and it was all going well. So I did their initial strategy and did their crowdfunding campaign, and they were very successful with that. And then because they had this investment, you know, the money backing them, they were able to build out a team. So the initial team was awesome to work with. But some new team members that came on board were just way too involved with marketing, thought they were, you know, understood it. One was actually, a compliance person. One was a salesperson. And it ended up being that these new people were just talking to me like just in a very rude manner, really disrespectful. And the CEO did nothing. Like, he just sat there and let it happen in meetings, which he was in. Mm. So when I spoke up for myself a couple of times, and I really enjoy working with men, but all of them were men. Right. And so when I stood up for myself and, you know, spoke to the facts, they didn't like hearing it. And so when that happened a few times, and a couple of conversations that I had with the CEO to say, hey, this is what's happening, this is unacceptable, and he's not doing anything about it, I just said, hey, I'm out. I can't do this anymore. It's a complete misalignment.
Yeah.
So
was that a weight off your shoulders as you made that phone call?
So good. Because you're kind of weighing up, you're like, well, how much, you're making some good money here.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus, is it really worth this
from
a mental health perspective and the stress that it's bringing me? And, you know, every time I had a meeting with him, I'm dreading it. I just wasn't enjoying it in any way, shape, or form.
That's not a good place to be. What about you, Sarah? Have you walked out? Because Sarah's, so I could say from Sarah's perspective versus everyone else, Sarah's kind of slightly earlier on in her career in doing this kind of thing. But, you know, have you sort of gone, I don't want to do this anymore?
Yes, I have actually. And it hasn't been too long ago that I did it. But it was just because, you know, at the same time, it's you do what you do because you want the flexibility and the ability to work with customers that you like to work with, that appreciate the work that you do for them and recognize the work that you do for them. And when you're underappreciated and, you know, you're not getting that recognition as well. I'm not saying you need to, you know, blow streamers or anything. But yeah, just, it's just, you get to a point where you're like, I don't have time for this. I've got, you know, there's so many other fish in the sea that I can work with and, provide my marketing experience. So, I just
sort of. And it's funny because I know where you're starting. Next week? Week after? Is it next week?
2 weeks.
2 weeks time. And I know for a fact that, you know, they love Sarah to bits, you know, and it's somewhat of a, let's call it an interesting work environment, but they love you. And I think I think certain people in there very much appreciate you, you know, even if they, you know, so I can see that there's, you know, it's all about you. You don't want recognition. You want a bit of recognition. You don't necessarily want people, as you say, blowing streamers. But you know, you want to feel that they recognize the value that you bring to the team. So, Charlie, what about you? Have you sort of gone, fuck this, and, you know, dropped the mic and walked out?
I haven't done it in a, like, necessarily, like, before time sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen it through, but I'll never let go of it because, as Sarah said, it's one of the core benefits of doing what we do. Everyone's probably had an experience in their life where they finally left a job or a gig and thought, why did I stay so long? There's absolutely a point where it's just not worth it. And that's for everyone involved, for you and probably the client as well. So, yeah, you best just call it at some point.
My story is I actually got escorted off the premises once as a consultant. So that's
what did
my,
you do?
What did I do?
Yes.
I spent 6 months telling this guy what he should be doing and dealing with his subcontractors, so his web developers and all these kind of people. And they just simply weren't doing anything, and I repeatedly keep telling him over and over. And for those of you that know me, certainly Christy and Sarah and Charlie doesn't know me quite as well, but you can imagine my tolerance for that sort of waned over time, the fact that he wasn't listening to me. And it got to a point where I got quite angry with him. and he just basically said, right, well, get out of my building. And the funny thing was, I kept trying to argue the point, and I should have just walked, but I kept trying to argue the point. And so yeah, I know. Again, you know me too well, Sarah, but he's sort of not necessarily manhandled me out of the building, but, like, you know, he's made me leave the building. And for a long time, I thought I was in the wrong. And over the years, I've met other people that have worked with him, and literally the stories are similar. I mean, they haven't been thrown out of the building, but they've all gone and just said, he doesn't listen to anything you tell him. And I've gone, okay, at least now I know I was in the right with that little bit. But my last question for everyone here, just, you know, there's a lot to take in when you're starting out in this journey, you know, if you're starting out as a consultant, but even the ones that have been doing this for, you know, a long year, you know, 10, 20 years and so on and so forth. But what would be perhaps the one thing that you would say that, and not just clients, but, you know, we're talking about difficult clients now, but that one thing that you would give as a piece of advice to maybe to you the day that you started doing this, what if you could pull yourself aside and go, Christy, listen to this and pay attention to this, what would you say to younger Christy?
It's a tough one. I think lean into what you know, like be really confident in what you know, your skills, your knowledge, and, you know, your previous experience in other roles and what you've achieved. And I think turn up just really, like, bold, you know, like just you know, and say, hey, this is how I work with my clients. If it doesn't kind of suit you, if this doesn't, you know, this way of working doesn't fit with you, well, then maybe we're not a good fit and we can't work together. But if it is the way that you would work well as well, like in a collaborative way, and are willing to work within, like, my proven frameworks and strategies, then let's roll, because we'll get there and we'll get, you know, reach your goals. So I think positioning yourself with confidence that you are the right person for their business.
What about you, Charlie? What would you say to younger Charlie?
Well, I mentioned it earlier, but this is also just a reminder for me to keep up with it, because it's probably not something I would instinctively do well at, but the documentation really covers your ass. And something I had to learn, something I got burnt by not doing, when a client says, well, what have you been doing the last 6 months? So I need to remember to do it. And it helps you out very much.
Sarah, what are you going to tell young Sarah?
Other than
don't drink as much when you go out.
I don't drink. All right, Sarah. The documentation definitely is one thing, but I will obviously, I do a lot of writing. So when I work with a client, I always document what I've done anyway, but that's internally. So it's also then being able to provide that to the client over the period of time as well, which is probably that communication that I would have, told myself in the past to do, but also knowing your worth. So going in, knowing what you're worth with the client, not undervaluing yourself, because at the end of the day, the clients that are the smaller clients are probably the ones that are going to expect the most of you as well.
Yeah. Yeah. My point to add on to all of this is knowing your worth, I think, is a great thing. And I'm going to sort of flip that on its head a bit, because this is something, and I turned 50 recently. I know I don't look it, but it's taken me this long to realize this, right, is that there are certain things, and there is a lot of certain things, that I am not very good at, right? And I think if I could tell younger Simon would be to learn the things that you're not good at and delegate them somewhere else to somebody who is good at doing them. Because I think I've spent too long working with myself, with business partners, with clients, whatever it is, trying to do things that I'm not good at. And subsequently, they're not looking as good or not performing as well as I could do if I'd sat there on day one and gone, I'm shit at this, and I'm good at this. So I'm going to do these things and I'm going to get someone else to do all these things. And I think the moment you sit there and go, nah, I'm not good at that, and acknowledge that and move it somewhere else and get someone who is good at it to do it, all of a sudden you become so much more effective and so much more impactful than you trying to struggle through doing things shitty. That's my final lesson. Last thing I want to do is just quickly go around. If people want to talk to you in more detail, what's the best way of reaching out to you and contacting you? We'll start with Charlie. Where can we best find Charlie?
Well, you can find my website at pigface.au or LinkedIn is also very easy.
And very quickly, Charlie, in 10 seconds, why Pigface Marketing?
Pigface is a beautiful Australian succulent, often found in sand dunes. They grow anywhere.
There you go.
I was today days old when I found that out. Okay, so thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time, Charlie. Christy, what about yourself? Where can everybody find you?
I'm everywhere.
Steady on, Christy.
Huntermarketing.co website, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, all the places, but I'm also just out and about networking all the time. So
awesome. All right, and last but definitely not least, Sarah.
So saneandqueen.com.au, so my website, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and that's about it.
Awesome. Thank you very much, guys, for your time. It's been super, super helpful. Really appreciate it. Have a good rest of your Friday.
Pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.